think I've taught too many classrooms in that time where I didn't talk to people, young people, about hooking up with the older people in their lives. It's become a burden for me. I don't mean I'm like this. I mean that I feel something in here. Basically, I love older people. And you know, something really strange struck me yesterday as I was thinking about it. So, Leona, you've been doing this for 20 years. And for the first time, I turned 48 the other day. Guess what's happening?
You're getting to be one of us.
Wait till you're 76.
Well, I never thought about it that way. And when you're saying that, reminds me of what a woman said in church one day. I was sitting there, and I said, I'm going to have a birthday soon. And I said, I'm getting old. And she must be about 75. She said, girl, shut up. And I said, yes, ma'am. But in any case, it dawns on me right now that I'm not just talking anymore about a group over here.
Yeah.
I am now talking about a group that, you know, those applications, they say 35 and over?
Yeah.
Well, I'm over. And I'm in this, and so now it's become something else. I'm talking about me as well. I'm on the younger end of it, but I see some things and I feel some things. I just want to share with you. So that basically, I'm going to read some poetry that expresses some of the things that I feel and believe, and I'm going to share. I just put my little outline up there, basically for me, but also for you if you're into taking notes. I always begin giving praise to God Almighty, who've given me my talents and my life. I always begin, because we do all things in Him. I always begin with scripture. Galatians 6:2 tells us, bear ye one of his burdens, thereby fulfilling the law of God. Deuteronomy 5:16 tells us, honor your father and your mother, as God has commanded you, thereby prolonging your life, and that it will be prosperous for you in the land your father's giving you. So I put these two together because this is what God has commanded that we do, that we look after those people who are growing older and who have grown older. So it's not always just a choice. It's something we have to do out of obedience. Something that I have to remember, that my mother and father, my father's dead now, but my mother in Alabama has been blessed because she reached out to older people. And now, with all of her children in California, and she's still in Alabama, there are people around her who love her, who have taken her in as though she were their mother. And that's going to happen to any of us. I believe God has promised us that blessing. And that when we do this sort of a thing, it's coming back. You reap what you sow, whether it's evil or good. But I look at what happened with my mother and father, how they were always there, always taking in someone, always reaching out. And I believe, I didn't realize it was happening, but I believe I got that from them. Now I have children who go into convalescent homes. My oldest daughter at 14, when she was 14, with her campfire thing, used to go in, and the older people loved her. And I have a 15-year-old boy when he was little. If he went into a place where there were a lot of people and was an older person, I could always bet he would go to the old woman. And I'm going to tell you a story about that later. But for now, I have a prayer ministry in a convalescent home in Richmond. And I've been doing this in the same home for about 6 years. And I go in, you know, on my own. I believe the Lord has blessed me to do this. He's given me the gift of joy and laughter. And I take that in. I go in and I touch people. I touch them physically. I put my hands on them. Because I have learned that we don't touch enough. I have walked into a convalescent home and I've seen people sitting there in chairs day after day after day after day, never feeling another warm hand on them. The hands that do touch them are often very mechanical and sometimes sometimes insensitive. I've had people say to me, I'm talking people of all colors and races. I've had people say to me, an old man said once, I said, "Where's your family?" He said, "You're it." And this was 5 minutes. It got to the place where when I went in, I would stay about an hour and a half because I would get to 17 people or so. Each one, they're sitting in the chairs, they're in their rooms, they're laying in the beds. So I'm going to give you a scenario of about three people that stand out in my mind right now that I met when I first started this. And it was not easy. That's why I know this is a calling from God, because Leona cannot walk into a convalescent home where there's someone lying there dying or someone sick that I've never seen, and it doesn't look pretty, it doesn't smell pretty. I can't do that by Leona. Leona says, no, I can't handle this. It's only by the Holy Spirit in me teaching me how to do this. And I'm going to tell you how that worked. Okay, I walked in one day, and I went to Mrs. Smith's room. At this time, I was still in the Catholic Church, and so I was taking communion. I'm not in the Catholic Church any longer, but I was taking communion then. I went to Mr. Smith's bed, and he was lying there, and right at the side of the bed was a urine bag. And this was one of my first times, and I know my human physical self, I thought, I don't know if I can handle this. And the words, what's a nice little girl like you doing in a place like this? You don't have to be in here. Get out. Run. And the Spirit of God checked me. He said, "You want to do this?" "Yeah." "Okay, there's a way to handle it. I can teach you not to even notice that." And I said, "Please, Lord, right now I need it." Okay, so what happened was Mr. Smith started talking. And as he started talking, I started forgetting everything there that was unpleasant to me. And I listened to this man that I'd never seen before talk to me about his altar boy experiences at a church when he was little, and he started reliving that. And he started talking about it, and I got caught up in it. And I walked away with one belief. No, don't fool yourself, girl. You're not the only one giving here. You're receiving, too. So it's a two-way thing. So I got a blessing just standing there talking to this man. And he got a blessing because someone listened. Then another thing was Helen. Helen came from Ohio, Iowa. She's dead now. And every time I got with her, she would take me and her back to Big Tree on the grounds of her grandmother's house, and she would talk about wanting to go back there. But several times I've walked in and I found Helen crying. She was in the room by herself. I think she must have been about 80. And I'm going to tell you her race for a reason. She was a white woman. And I say that because when it comes to pain and loneliness, we have no colors. At that point, we have no colors. I was a younger black woman. She was an older white woman. We weren't supposed to have anything in common, according to what the world says. But when you go in Christ, and when you go in love, and when you go in the Spirit, you go to give Jesus Christ to somebody. And every time I would walk in, my prayers, "Lord, who do you want me to talk to today?" I have the regular little clientele there who will shout, if I don't get to them, they'll say, "Where's my prayer?" You know, I had a man, I didn't see him that day. He said, "You didn't give me my prayer." Well, okay, those are my regular ones. But then I always go in saying, "Okay, Lord, use the side of my eye. Who do I need to pick up as I'm praying with these people?" And there's always someone. I can say, "Would you like to join us?" And I've never had, only once, someone say, "I don't think so." But most of the time it's yes. And they do join. So Helen and I had a thing going on, two things. To reminisce her childhood and our Father. How that came out, I always pray with each one of them individually, a personal prayer. And I call their name and ask the Lord to just engulf them in His peace. And then I say the Our Father with each of them. I usually say it about 17 times before I left. I know it very well now. And I sang it once. And Helen started joining in with me. She would sort of mouth it and sing it a bit. And every time I went in at that point, after that, we did that. And she would stop crying. I found her crying a lot. And she would stop crying and say, "Oh, that was good." And I said, "It sure was." You know, because I enjoyed it too. Okay, that's one experience. Another one, this was an older black woman whose name I never got. I was going through doing the rounds, and talking and laughing, and Helen and I always laughed a lot together. She had a great sense of humor. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, too. Humor in older people. I was leaving the convalescent home this day, and all of a sudden, I heard this voice singing, "What a friend we have in Jesus." And she was singing it over and over again. She got loud with it. And I turned around and I went back to her. And she looked at me and she said, "Child," I just love it when they call me child. She said, "Child," she said, "Lord will make it all right." She said, "He's going to make it all right. He always did make it all right." And I said, "I know." I said, "Hallelujah." She said, "Hallelujah, he sure do." And I said, "Yeah, you know, I agree with that." And I put my hand, I held her hand, and she sang, and I sang, we sang together. And she kept saying, "Lord, gonna make it all right." And I said to myself, "How did she know I needed to hear that?" I mean, there it was, my blessing, again. And I left that day feeling as though I had received more than I had given. And my urge, I cannot say enough to people to go into places. They don't have to be convalescent homes. They can be a neighbor across the street. To knock on somebody's door. Walk in, give some old person a chance to open the door and say, "Come in." Those are common words. We say them all the time. "Come in." There are some people who are sitting right under our noses who never get a chance to say, "Come in." We need to give people those chances. Now, shut in and shut out. I want to talk about a couple of ways in which both of these are done. Those people in convalescent homes are obviously shut in, right? The people that you know from your church who can't come to church anymore are obviously shut in. But there are people who are right under our noses who are shut out. And that, in its own way, is being shut in. The ones who sit in the rooms of our homes are the ones, the mothers or the aunts and friends or the church people who are right near us that we avoid. Well, I see Miss Jones over on the other aisle here, barely making it. Someone must have brought her to the store. I don't want her to see me because she might ask me, and I don't have time. I better not give him a ride to church because if that happens, I might have to do it again, and it's just such a hassle on Sunday mornings as it is getting up to church. So I better avoid her shutting someone out that way. I tell my students all the time, go to your grandmamas and your granddaddies and some old person and sit at their feet. It's time to sit there. And this moves. I want to get all this said before I get into the poetry, so you know exactly what's in my heart here. We make three basic assumptions about old people. I've seen it done over and over again. One, they don't want intimacy. That's a big fallacy there. They don't want intimacy. Two, they don't need laughter. They're too old to laugh. Three, they just ain't got no wisdom. There's nothing, they don't have anything worth our talking to them about. Let's face it, old fogies. That's basically what many of us have been trained. I know the young people that I teach, a lot of them, feel as though, well, okay, so we don't have anything in common. Make something in common. Of course, you don't have it. You have to make it before it comes. Intimacy. I'll give you an example. I like to give illustrations.
There's the difference in saying to your mother-in-law who might be living in or who might be visiting, or an old woman across the street, or an old man who sits on his porch. It's the difference in saying, I had a pretty hard day today. It was a hard day. And saying, you know, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what I'm going to do about this. What do you think? When you put it that way, you give them a chance to come in. And you better believe they will come in. They will come in. It is the difference. And there's a kind of intimacy with us that we cut off. We don't let them get that way with us sometimes. It's like, this is my problem. Well, no, when there's something out of a person's life, lived a long life, there's bound to be something you can say to me about this situation, whether I accept it or not. I need to give you the chance. You need the chance as an older person to hook up that way. Another example is this. Maybe someone is sick in the house. Maybe the older person is bedbound. It's nice to go in and open the Venetian blinds and let the sun in. But it's even nicer to take some in. A joke, a funny story, or draw out one of their stories. Older people have stories, believe me. I've heard my grandmother's going to be 102. Mm-hmm. And you know she has some stories. And some of them I heard over and over and over and over and over again. And the worst thing to say to an older person who's telling the story for the 20th time is, but Mommy, you told that. She knows it. But it's so good to her, she's going to tell it again. So let her. Intimacy. This is the one that's clearest to me. It's the difference in spreading the covers and sitting on the bed. I can spread the covers and make you comfortable and walk out. Or I can sit on the bed. And when I sit on the bed, you and I are going to talk a bit. I'm getting a little closer. I'm going to be here. I'm allowing myself to open up for you, and I want you to know that I am here. I want you comfortable. I want the sheets smooth. But maybe you don't mind. Maybe this old person doesn't mind rumble sheets. I bet any, if you gave a person in a bed like that a choice, and this is someone who's aware that you're there, if you gave this person a choice as to whether or not he wants the sheets smooth or rumpled up because you're sitting there, what do you think you'd take?
Rumble sheets
with you sitting there. Intimacy can be the difference in smoothing the sheets and walking out and rumpling them because you sat there and you stayed a while. Laughter. Let me tell you about Mary Jane McVeigh. Some of the best laughing I've done wholeheartedly have been done in room with an older person and people that I didn't really know. Helen was one. I told you about her. I don't know what we were saying. I can't even recall some of the things we said that were silly. I'd say something silly, she'd say something silly back. And we finally concluded one day, we're the silliest people in here, aren't we? Because people would look and wonder, what's going on in there? They're laughing. And then other people with their wheelchairs at the door, you know, come on in. That's taking in the sunshine, the difference in opening the Venetian blinds and letting the sunshine in and taking it in yourself. As a poet, that's the way I like to think about it. Mary Jane McVeigh. She's gone. An old black woman. I'm going to read some poetry about her in a minute. This is going to lead into that. Who lived in front of me? Some of you who might have been in my poetry session yesterday might have heard this. She didn't know how old she was. The records got burned. And they were in the Bible, and the Bible got burned. And I think she was, at the time, about 78 or so. Anyway, we had a two-year-old at the time. We have six children now. But we had a two-year-old who's now 20. And a 6 months old. Okay.
she would babysit them for us. And she had a philosophy that I've heard all my life, and you've heard it because you said it too. It's live and let live. Only when I heard it, I always thought people meant, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. But when Mrs. McDade said it, it meant, I will make it possible for you to live, and you will make it possible for me to live, and we have to help each other in this way. So whenever I said, when she babysat, and I said, how much do I owe you? She would say, child, we got to live and let live. And that was that. You don't owe me anything. But anyway, the story is this. She was keeping Derek, who was 6 months old at the time, and I'm still a new young mother. I took the little bottle of jar of junior foods. I packed it away like you always do, if you're a good mother.
This is, okay, what's happening is there's a fire alarm. They're clearing whatever building it is, and she's announcing for the search crews to go, and there will be staff members that will go in and sweep the building.
But it's not this building.
No. If it were this building, then there'd be a bell ringing specifically in this building, and we'd leave. So we just continue with what we're doing.
Okay. Anyway, I took the jar of junior food, and I came back 3 hours later, and the jar of food was still in the bag. And I said, oh, no, she didn't feed my baby. And I said, Mrs. McDade, what happened? Wasn't he hungry? She said, child, that boy didn't want that stuff. She said, he had to eat something. And she said, I just chopped up some of those greens in there, and I picked some bones out of the fish, and I fed that boy. Don't give him that stuff no more. This is a growing boy. And I said, yes, ma'am. And from then on, Derek didn't eat junior foods. But that was a kind of wisdom. And it was funny to me because she was so serious about it, but yet she meant for me not to do that. I mean, like, what's the matter with you? Don't you know anything about feeding a baby? But she didn't say it that way. She said, boy, I was hungry. And so I gave him some real food. Anyway, let me introduce you to her further. I was very impressed about this woman's wisdom. We would sit and talk. And I thought, you know, all this wisdom in the world, according to the records, doesn't even know that she's here. So I started writing poems about her, and I would take her to my readings, and I would sit her in the front, and I would say, okay, they don't know you, but they're going to know you now. So one day, a newspaper article came out about me and my poetry, and I mentioned Mrs. McDade, and she read it, and she said, Shaw, you're going to have me feeling like Miss Anne around here. And I say, you're not Miss Anne, but you're certainly not Mrs. McDade. Mary Jane McDade. Her hair has become like the gray of an ageless Mississippi moss. Her face wears the emblem of fulfilled years unrewarded, and time is unaware that she was there. Her yesterday brings no celebrations for today. Her today is a collection of yesterday's faded, dry-rotted doilies, locked tight in a stale, snuff-scented room. And time is unaware that she is there. An untaught scholar with a human degree in live and let live. And time is unaware that she is there. After that poem, I wrote another one. This could be Mrs. McDade. This is a picture that I've seen all my life. It was a picture of an old black woman on a warm day wearing a heavy coat and carrying a big brown paper bag. And I've seen this so many times. And I've wondered, why is she wearing the heavy coat on a hot day like this? And my grandmother used to say, when she went out with her umbrella and the sun was shining, she said, well, I tell you what, a wise man leaves his and a fool takes one. Now, what does that mean? Well, I found out later that, okay, so I think you're a fool for carrying your umbrella when the sun is shining, but she said, watch and see what happens when it rains, and then we'll see. So it would usually rain, right? In other words, be prepared. So I wrote this when I saw this woman. I was in the laundromat, and I had some potato chips, and I took the bag, and I wrote the poem on it. Old black woman trudging down the street. Heavy brown paper bag, sore, tired feet. Covered a million years times 10 million more. lived a million lifetimes trudging to and fro, head rag tied over gray kinked head, back bent dragging on, heart full of lead. What is she toting in that big brown bag? A ton of bitter black bread for every year she's had. Tired old woman, weary in your soul, lay your paper bag down, let your tale be told. And I tried to tell Mrs. McDade's story. Okay, I'm going to move on to a thing called Tribute to Old Black Women. I'm going to give you a chance to do some talking here in a minute. I'm going to be doing three sessions on this. And as I go through the sessions, I'm going to expose more of the poems in here. This is an anthology that was published, there are six copies of it in the library only, in the bookstore. It's an anthology of 21 contemporary black playwriters, and eight of them, of us, were from Oakland. Now, the piece in here is different from all other pieces in that it's a choreo poem, it's meant to be danced. It's given tribute to the hands of old black women and the roles that they've played in their lives. And as the dancer dances it and the poem's being read, the focus is on the hands. So what I'm going to do today is read only the prologue. And then in the days to come, I will talk and read the other poems. There are seven of them. And here's what I want you to start thinking about. You might have some paper, and some of you won't, for the day. The session is over. I want you to have in mind the name of a person, an old person who's dear to you, somebody that you would tell us about, somebody that you would introduce as I introduce Mrs. McDade, and let us know who this person is and why you want us to celebrate that person, and we're going to celebrate this person with you. And I'll just say that briefly again to give you the benefit of what we're going to do as soon as I finish here. You're going to think of the name of a person that you would want us to celebrate with you. And write it on the paper. Commit to the name. And then we'll talk about and we'll celebrate somebody with you. Okay? All right. Because that's basically what I'm all about, celebrating old people. This prologue, Hands in the Mirror. This is a dance poem, a moving poem, a poetic expression written as a tribute to old black women everywhere. This is their lost poem, the poem that got caught in the brambles the day before the harvest, the poem that became the tears after the crop was lost. This is the poem, the black woman poem that was misplaced in the shuffle up the hill to work, and back down to soak two tired, lonely feet. This is the poem that moved with the spirit from the wooden pulpit to the top of a nodding head and a constant and rhythmic amen. This poem has touched many a soft, milk chocolate, tiny smiles and cupped them in its hands. This poem has glided in soundless, doe-like fashion through open fields, tapped its feet in light-hearted exuberance, and held his breath at the edge of a million hopes. This poem is energy, dark and rich. This poem is motion as it is sound. Hear this beautiful old black woman poem whose meter and beat could have been the anxiety beat of a heart birthing a black child on a cold, rainy night in an Alabama backwoods. This poem remembers the hand that started the breath, and it remembers the breath. This is their poem, Old Black Women. This is their dance, the dance whose movements waited and waited until the right day got here, waited too long, and became tired before they recognized the right to be movements in their own rhythms. This is their dance, their swirls and twirls of joy, knowing a new day, a new dollar, and a new strength for daring. This is their dance, slow, stretching, turning, yearning, giving, living, as love moves inside and reaches itself outwards to those in their world. The dance and the poem are one with the woman. It is a tear dropped in the dark, a smile crossed with the sun, a song whispered at the edge of a precipice, a cry shouted on a meteor, streaming from cloud.
This is love. This is a love dance of age, a love dance of black, a dance of woman. Take this offering in your hand, this offering of your hands and its solemnity, sincerity, and dance. Dance now to the rhythm of your own soul. Take this offering and move at the pace of your own joy, knowing back the love that you gave out. Take this offering now and move as your hands have moved across the wrinkled brow of a heavy world and sweetened its bitter sweat. Let this offering sweeten the sweat of your own brow. Dance, old black woman. Dance.
Now I want you to write your name and give us a chance to celebrate tonight. What did you say?
You're writing the name of somebody.
Yeah.
And then you're going to share and tell us a little about that person and so we can celebrate. Okay.
Or if you don't have any paper or pencil.
Just say the name.
Go ahead. Yeah. I'm just happy.
Sit down and enjoy the celebration.
Okay, well, this is my pastor's wife over here, and she's a much better speaker than I am.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh,
come on, Mrs. Blake.
Okay, out of your own life now. Out of your own life.
Okay,
you can wait if you want to.
I'm going to get over with. Okay, this is a lady that Ms. Clayton and I know. She's a white woman,
uh-huh.
90 years old.
Uh-huh.
She was a child of a Lutheran couple. Her father was a Lutheran preacher, and her mother was a pretty stout, strong-hearted woman.
Uh-huh.
And so she doesn't know what it means to live outside of the Lutheran religion. She's been a soldier in the army ever since birth.
Hmm.
And I imagine that there are a lot of people when they are 90, society cares to put them on a shelf and collect dust.
Mm-hmm.
But not with Selma. She's always doing something, and she recently was awarded a heritage award from the state of doing ethnic things.
Mm-hmm.
She came over here in the early 1900s, and our church was established 81 years ago. And a lot of records and everything were spoken in old German.
Mm-hmm.
And like my pastor, he could not translate them. And she's always translating, accounts of the early Lutheran church.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several Lutheran prayers in German. She was translating them over to English. She was a teacher of German,
mm-hmm.
taught German for about 40 years. About 40 years. And unfortunately, this lady lives about half a block away from the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the grocery store, people are selling drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about one or two people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking maybe a dozen
mm-hmm.
at any given time. But when someone goes to the store, she doesn't walk around the crowd.
Mm.
She walks through the crowd, just like the parting of the Red Sea. They let this lady go into the store, and they don't harass her. They'll say, good day, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Then when she leaves the store, they'll part again and let her on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because she shows no fear.
Mm-hmm.
She shows no fear. She's that's why I love her so much. She's such an inspiration
mm-hmm.
of what it means to be a Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her. Our church loves her. And
What is her name again?
Selma Muller.
We celebrate Selma. Let's celebrate Selma. A warrior, you said, and that's very appropriate. Okay, who else are we going to celebrate? We don't have to go in order.
I celebrate Olive Grade. And she is 95. She's a black woman. She lives in Morristown, New Jersey. And I live in Seattle, Washington, so we live on opposite, shores. But I have visited her a great deal, and I have known her for, since 43. And I think that comes to pretty close to 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
But she's such an inspiration to me because I say she's in just as good a shape as I am, and I'm not quite 78 yet. And she's 95, celebrating her 95th birthday last year. And she is a Methodist woman and had been working in her church all of her life. I think she just gave up some of her responsibilities. She was teaching Bible. She was teaching the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And she would help them get ready for when it was their turn to run services and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody knows her in the area. And I'm always amazed at what good shape she's in. She's mentally alert.
Mm-hmm.
And physically runs her house. She's been living in her house alone, except that her son, who lived in North Jersey, came home.
Laughter and all these things those assumptions. You were talking about how alert she is. All those assumptions you seem to make about older people.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, the two that we've even looked at here defy this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
They do want intimacy. Yes. They do still have laughter, and yes, there's wisdom in them that we need to, even at your age, you say you're 78?
Pretty soon, next month.
So you have found someone who is to you an age, like Mrs. McDade was to me, and you're sitting at her feet.
Yeah.
As I sit at Mrs. McDade's feet, as you sit at Selma's feet. And it goes on, and that's the way, we live in a society that's very strange. We cut the tree from its roots before the sap stops flowing. And then we expect to go on living. Go ahead.
I think that's enough.
Okay. Let's celebrate Olive. Let's hear a couple more. You're going to do one other poem and then get into some more, that sort of thing. Who else wants to celebrate an older person?
I'd like to celebrate Sarah. Sarah is not, Sarah is not like these two ladies that does a lot of things for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah is a little bit retarded.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah has different needs and different wants.
Mm-hmm.
A friend and I started visiting Sarah and her sister, oh my goodness, it's been 25, 30 years ago, and at the time, they were very reclusive. Well, they still are.
Mm-hmm.
Clara, her sister, has died, but they were very reclusive. And when we came and we had our little brochures, Lutheran ladies do, they have their Christian magnifier and all this sort of good stuff that goes on in church. And so you knock at the door, and instead of saying, come in, they open the door about that much, and they looked up. And we said, well, we're Dorothy and Helen, and we have these papers for you. We'd like to visit with you. They reached in, and they just shut the door. Okay. That would have been a real good time to just say, well, I guess they really don't want But we came back, and we still had these dumb old Christian magnifiers, the Lutheran ladies do. And this time, we brought some cookies along. And they were they're Norwegian ladies. The Norwegian ladies love cookies and coffee.
I mean, you're getting kind of serious.
Well, that, like I said, and they did let us come in. We were there. We had coffee and cookies with them. And I don't know. I know that Helen and I were blessings to them.
Yeah.
But Sarah and Clara, which was the two sisters, and Clara, like I said, is dead now, have been blessings to us.
Mm-hmm.
And the highlight of Sarah's year in her birthday, which we celebrated one day early because I was coming out here to hold her village. And when I called her and I said, Sarah, Helen and I are coming over to celebrate your birthday a day early because we won't be here. Well, she said, I'll have a coffee ready. And I mean, it was expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we had come, I know she would have thought we had gone or something. And Sarah's just special. Sometimes the thing that she has is her TV soap operas, and sometimes you don't know whether she's talking about soap operas or real life. I mean, they're really real to her, but so are Helen and Dorothy. And so I like to celebrate them.
And that blessing thing, that's why at some point, it didn't take long for me to realize when I was going to town, that's home the same as you. No bones about it. I am not the only person receiving here. I mean, giving. Sometimes I thought I received more than I gave, and that is a blessing. And the intimacy, when you went to the door, as you said, you could have gone away and not come back, but you allowed her another chance at intimacy with you. And now, that is
obviously. I'm going to tell you one little funny thing. And see, these two guys, they're not real bright. I mean, I don't know. I suppose now we would have had them in special classes and that sort of thing. But they didn't do that.
Right.
Sarah was home all the time and took care of the other children because it was a large family and everything. And one time I delivered meals on wheels to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was at Christmas time. And she said, Clara, do you have a baby? And I mean, these ladies are, really? Well, yeah. Clara said, you have a baby. And I think they'd gotten the Christmas story. I mean, these ladies had never, ever married. And these ladies But maybe they were talking about a soap opera. I don't know. I didn't get that clear. But I really
celebrate. Yeah, that's so proud.
She said 36, but
we'll let it be 36. You wanted to celebrate, and then you wanted to celebrate someone.
Yes, I wanted to celebrate Helen Tate.
Okay.
We live in a retirement village, and she lives in the personal care section of it, and so can't get out. And I always take my husband with me when I go to see Helen, because they seem to need men to talk to and appreciate that. If I didn't bring him, I know she would be very, very disappointed because they always talk about the baseball games and any games that are on TV. She keeps up with them and she knows my husband does too. And that is their conversation. But she lost her, they had one daughter who died when she was around 50. And after they moved to our retirement village, her husband died. So she is alone. She has no children. And as far as we know, she has no relatives. So she's one person that I visit very regularly, at least once a week and sometimes more often. And when we left, I've been sending her postal cards because I know she misses our visits. But she is not a poor woman. She has plenty of money, but we must remember that sometimes the wealthy get lonely too. What we give her is far more precious, I think, than any money could be. But I'd like to celebrate Helen Tate.
Well, actually, need to celebrate one male here too. I want to celebrate Arthur Leader Andrews, and I know Dave knows him. He was in college. He was my boss, as well as my professor, and I was his secretary. And I guess when I was in college, I thought he was old already. He's now about 86, and he is lively. He is energetic, and he still has the gift of humor and of voice. And I haven't seen him for 20-some years, and my husband's hair is receding slightly. And Holly was with one of his advisees when we were in college, and he said, Holly, you're losing your hair. And Tom said, yes, I'm pretty still. And he said, well, did you know that if you start losing your hair from the front, it's because you're a thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you start losing your hair from the back, it's because you're a lover. And he said, when they meet, you just think you're a lover. We went back last year for our 30th class reunion, and when I was his secretary, I was this dumb little freshman who's in college who just, you know, was trying to make it and had to work and so on. And he, in his gallantry, I mean, the gentleman that he is, introduced me to someone by saying, this is the secretary who kept me afloat. When I was just the dean of students, learning what I had to do, she's the one who kept me afloat. Now, I say that's a gentlemanly, gallant thing, because I was a dummy who didn't know what I was doing. But because of the person he is still gracious. He's still writing books at 86.
Really?
And he's just a fantastic man who has served the Lord all his life when he had many other opportunities to make himself a big name.
Uh-huh.
Instead, he said, no, the Lord has called me here at this college, and this is where I stay. And he's a wonderful man, so I celebrate our opportunity.
We're going to hear some more. I mean, this is great. There was a poem that I had on my list to read to you dealing with the wisdom. It's out of hands in the mirror. It's the first poem that's danced. And it's called Poem of Knowing and Caring. Now I want you to picture yourself. Some of you are younger. Older. Picture yourself in high school if you can. Coming in from the prom. Proms were different then than they are now. The highlight of my prom was going to the nearest hamburger stand and getting home by midnight. When I tell that to my students, they laugh at me terribly. Because they're flying off to Hawaii and all these other things. But I came in, I was coming in, and some of this, I mean, this is, all of these poems are not my grandmother. They're other people's relatives, too. But this is my grandmother. This is called Sheep, a poem of caring, knowing and caring. Just came in from a date, right? Okay. She knew. When I snuck in through the back door, after he drove off, after I snuck in, putting my click between the screen and the door facing to snuff out the screeching hinge, she knew I had a tear in my eye, so she quickly flicked off her lamp light and crawled under the quilt. She knew just when to give me my own moments of pain, when I needed them the most, when I needed them to myself. She knew that when the last salty tear had rolled down my face onto the white chiffon dress to my brand new silk stocking and landed tap on the linoleum floor, she knew that I was in the bathroom, and when she heard the water running, that it was cold, and I was making a desperate splash to wash out the red in my eyes. She knew, just as she knew which corner of the bureau drawer she'd have to stick her hand in into the dark to get her anise bottle. Just as she knew which day and which hour the sparrows would reappear on the back fence. She knew my private tears. In her mind and in her heart, she held me to her bosom, because she knew that in a minute or two, I'd be sitting there in the pitch black room in her favorite and only straw rocker with the sunken seat. She knew I'd come in and pretend to be interested in how many mason jars she'd filled with figs and peas today, and that she'd pretend to be interested with me, and that we'd both build up the importance of getting the new Phoenician blinds strung tomorrow. But it didn't matter, because we both knew that she'd already kissed my hair and placed her oily mahogany hands against my tear-stained face and said without opening her mouth, it's going to be all right, child. Come on in. Just you wait. It's going to be all right. She knew that I had heard what she had not mouthed, had felt what she had not stirred a muscle to touch. We both knew that there in the silent, unmoved night, she had already touched away most of the pain. Oh God, how she knew that I could feel her damp hands touching my mind there in the dark. Her hands counting the beads one at a time, counting in resolved whispers, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary. Came for me.
tend for her arthritis, and tend for somebody worse off than both of us. And so on and so on, until every bead had been counted and the tarnished cross kissed 3 times. It's gonna be all right, child. She knew that come morning, the back door would swing open wide and full, and my half-trembling smile would be full grown and sitting on top of the new day sun, full grown smile and me. She knew. Okay, celebrations. You can talk in terms of any of the things we've talked about or anything that hasn't been mentioned yet. A couple more people, okay?
Esther, my mother-in-law, we've been sending her cards all the time. Oh, she's, my father-in-law is still living too. She's 87, and she's not housebound exactly, but mm-hmm. pretty much. She broke her hip a couple years ago. But not too long ago, they were still cooking meals, and now her daughter-in-law does bring food over and things like that. But she was born in Sweden, mm-hmm. We always kid her about her Swedish accent, but she was probably 9 months old when she came to the United States. That much of a Swedish accent. She was bragging the other day. She says, "I know where everything is in this house." How much she can find, put her hands on all the stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I think she does.
Really?
Uh-huh. And she's giving away her large collections of plates and things like that. And I'm glad she's doing that while she's mm-hmm. still able to know who and things are labeled with. Mm-hmm. This one goes to so-and-so and this goes to so-and-so.
Oh,
she used to do that when she was traveling, too, in case she didn't get back safely. She couldn't.
Oh. She wants to be sure that everybody
gets what she wants them to have. Yeah.
What is her name?
Esther.
Anybody else?
I have a mother-in-law who it's great. She's gone now. But she came from Norway as an adult to get married. Rode across, of course, went through Ellis Island, and came across the United States to meet her husband-to-be, who was older than she, and she thought she would be coming to a marvelous country and will come mm-hmm. to America. And they lived, the first place they lived was with some relatives who were not kind, mm-hmm. and they finally scrubbed up an old chicken coop and lived in that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was young. She went over to Idaho to be near a daughter and started cooking at the sororities and fraternities and was a marvelous cook. She mm-hmm. did everything for cake mix. Or she made bread for the boys. She loved the fraternities the best because she loved boys. And I'll never forget one when she was working in one sorority and they had a big party the night before and the whole camp was dead. And this one hasher came in to help her and he was in So she said, "I wasn't going to have," and she talked with a strong Norwegian accent. She said, "I wasn't going to have him in my kitchen." Mm-hmm. So I just told him to get on out of there. Came the next day and he said, "Hannah, why did you kick me out of the kitchen?" And she said, "Nobody can be in my kitchen without his pants on." And she did. He didn't have pants on, but he was so drunk. And that's the kind of a woman she was. And one of her, she always had these sayings. And one time she was there, my kids came home and they were all with John Grandma, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they were complaining about this one older woman in our church who thought their skirts were too short, their so forth and so on. And she said, "You know," she said, "the cow can never remember when it was a calf." And she always had these darling things.
And those are the ones that stick out in your mind, like some of the things I was talking about with Ms. McDay. A lot of other things I won't remember, but those little things that hooked up with me with her the time and back,
uh-huh.
you'll remember.
And I thought, well, that was a real good lesson for me
uh-huh.
in dealing with my children.
Yeah.
I can never remember when she was a cow.
And no one comes into your kitchen without his pants on.
Actually, it was Johanna.
Johanna. Okay, we got about 10 more minutes here, do we? Okay, we can hear a couple more.
I like to celebrate my grandmother, who died about 5 years ago at the age of 96. Her name was Sybil Halpin, and she was a Lutheran pastor's wife. And I think one of the things that I appreciate, the older I get, is that she lived probably 26 years without her husband after he died. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. That's a long time. Yet I never got the sense that she was felt sorry for herself or was lonely. She had sayings through Oliver's list, "It's a great life if you don't weaken." That's who I had often. She would walk up, she lived in Seattle, and she would walk up to the Children's Orthopedic Hospital and sew layettes for the babies. And she loved doing that. And she lived on her own until the last 4 months.
And it sounds like she lived out that saying.
She did. She did. And she loved basketball. She loved watching the Sonics. And she could talk about downtown Freddie Brown and all kinds of things. And read Time magazine until, you know, that was one of the sad things, was that her eyesight prevented her from reading at the end. But she was very up on current affairs. And that was real fun to hear her perspective, which I a lot of times did not agree with. Most of the time, I disagree with it.
But you know, that's all right.
Oh, yeah, that was a flavor to my life. And I would talk to her on the phone every day, and I missed her a lot. And I was really glad I knew her as an adult. I don't think you very often know your grandmother when you're an adult, and she knew all of my children, and I don't know.
That is a blessing. My grandmother died at 102, but I was away from her at the time. She was at 98. I remember she was still going strong, and I remember at 95, she flew to New York to see about, by herself, to see two sick sons. And when she died, she didn't die from anything. She just got tired and died. She just lay down and stayed there about a year. And then she just went on. But I was just becoming an adult when I left. And so that span of time knowing her as an adult, I didn't get in that, and I missed that, and it's a blessing when you do have it. That's why I tell my students all the time, sit down at their feet. It's time to sit down at the feet, at the root, the tree of wisdom. Get some of this stuff so that when they're gone, it's not gone. And so now we can talk about all these people, and some of them are still here. Obviously, they're living on, and that's very, very important.
Her name?
Sybil. Sybil, yeah.
Okay.
Celebrating someone. Do you have someone you want to celebrate?
I think of Ed, who appearances are deceiving, but I think Ed's close to 90 now. But he drives his car down to the church south of town where he lives, and out in the country there, rings the bell for us, climbs up a very narrow, treacherous, old, 100-year-old staircase to where the belfry is, and rings the bell for us. And in the wintertime, when he gets into his old American car, whatever it is, guns the motor, and we're afraid that he might shoot off into the field somewhere, get out on the highway when a semi is coming down over the hill, and he just makes it very well. He has some children who are living, but it is by himself. And when we have our meals, sometimes we have meals, he's too shaky to eat. Well, he does get that down. When there's communion, I don't give him the glass. I pour it because he's too shaky. But he's very, very vital and gets around and does a lot and never says much. I've never heard him say very much. Probably hasn't spoken at a church or an annual meeting or anything like that. Certainly not while we have been there. Not a quiet person, but just not a talker.
But a presence.
And a treasure for us. But so old and almost taken for granted, or so plain and almost taken for granted. Let us celebrate Ed.
Like they say in the Baptist Church, is there one?
Okay, I'm going to let you know what's happening for tomorrow. I think I made it 350. I do want to tell you that if you plan to return to one of these, what I will do at the beginning is briefly recap some stuff and move in, because I plan to cover all the hands in the mirror. And the areas left are Poem of Birthing, because my grandmother was the midwife for two of us, nine children. Poem of a Tired Old Woman, Poem of the Cooking Pot, if you come in hungry, I promise to feed you. Poem on a Sunday Morning, and Poem of Prayer for